itself, Shuden said. The more faces we try to wear, the more confused they become. Roile nodded slightly, smiling. True. Boring, perhaps, but true. Serene was barely listening. She had assumed that she was the one doing the manipulating. She had never realized the disadvantage it gave her. The facade is troubling, she admitted. Then she sighed, turning back to Shuden. But I am stuck with it, at least with a king. Honestly, though, I doubt he would have regarded me any other way, no matter how I acted. You're probably right, Shuden said. The king is rather short-sighted when it comes to women. The king returned a few moments later, his face dark, his humor obviously ruined by whatever news he had received. The courier escaped with a look of relief, and as he left, Serene caught sight of a new figure entering the room. Duke Telrai was customarily pompous in bright reds and golds, his fingers speckled with rings. Serene watched him closely, but he didn't join or even acknowledge the Yawn Wraithen. In fact, he seemed to doggedly ignore the priest, instead making the proper hostly overtures, visiting with each group of guests in turn. You're right, Lord Roile, Serene finally said. Roile looked up from his conversation with Shuden. Hmm? Duke Telrai, Serene said, nodding to the man. There's something between him and the Yawn. Telrai is a troublesome one, Roile said. I've never quite been able to figure out his motivations. At times, it seems he wants nothing more than coin to pad his coffers. At others, Roile trailed off as Telrai, as if noticing their study of him, turned towards Serene's group. He smiled and drifted in their direction, Aetera at his side. Lord Roile, he said with a smooth, almost uncaring voice. Welcome. And, Your Highness, I don't believe we've been properly introduced. Roile did the honors. Serene curtsied as Telrai sipped at his wine and exchanged pleasantries with Roile. There was a startling level of nonchalance about him. While few noblemen actually cared about the topics they discussed, most had the decency to at least sound interested. Telrai made no such concession. His tone was flippant, though not quite to the level of being insulting, and his manner uninterested. Beyond the initial address, he completely ignored Serene, obviously satisfied that she was of no discernible significance. Eventually, the Duke sauntered away, and Serene watched him go with annoyance. If there was one thing she loathed, it was being ignored. Finally, she sighed and turned to her companion. All right, Lord Shuden. I want to mingle. Wraithen has a week's lead, but Domai be cursed if I'm going to let him stay ahead of me. It was late. Shuden had wanted to leave hours ago, but Serene had been determined to forge on, plowing through hundreds of people, making contacts like a madwoman. She made Shuden introduce her to everyone he knew, and the faces and names had quickly become a blur. However, repetition would bring familiarity. Eventually, she let Shuden bring her back to the palace, satisfied with the day's events. Shuden let her off and wearily bid her good night, claiming he was glad that Ehane was next in line to take her to a ball. Your company was delightful, he explained, but I just can't keep up with you. Serene found it hard to keep up with herself sometimes. She practically stumbled her way into the palace, so drowsy with fatigue and wine that she could barely keep her eyes open. Shouts echoed through the hallway. Serene frowned, turning a corner to find the king's guard scrambling around, yelling at one another, and generally making a rather large nuisance of themselves. "What is going on?" she asked, holding her head. "Someone broke into the palace tonight," a guard explained. "Snuck right through the king's bedchambers."
"Is anyone hurt?" Serene asked, suddenly coming alert.
Aiden and Ishin had left the party hours before her and Shuden.
"Thank Doma, I know," the guard said.
Then he turned to two soldiers. "Take the princess to a room, and stand guard at the door," he ordered.
"Good night, Your Highness. Don't worry. They're gone now."
Serene sighed, noting the yelling and bustle of the guards, their armor and weapons clanking as they periodically ran through the hallways. She doubted that she would be able to have a good night with so much ruckus, no matter how tired she was. Chapter 15. At night, when all melted into a uniform blackness, Raythan could almost see Elantris's grandeur. Silhouetted against the star-filled sky, the fallen buildings cast off their mantle of despair and became memories. Memories of a city crafted with skill and care. A city where every stone was a piece of functional art. Memories of towers that stretched to the sky, fingers tickling the stars, and of domes that spread like venerable hills. And it had all been an illusion. Beneath the greatness had been wreckage, a filthy sore now exposed. How easy it was to look past heresies gilded with gold. How simple it had been to assume that outward strength bespoke inward righteousness.
"Dream on, Elantris," Raythan whispered, turning to stroll along the top of the great wall that enclosed the city. "Remember what you used to be, and try to hide your sins beneath a blanket of darkness. Tomorrow the sun will rise, and all will be revealed once again."
"My lord, did you say something?"
Raythan turned. He had barely noticed the guard passing him on the wall, the man's heavy spear resting over his shoulder, and his wan torch nearly dead.
"No, I was only whispering to myself."
The guard nodded, continuing his rounds. They were growing accustomed to Raythan, who had visited Elantris nearly every night this week, pacing its walls in thought. Though he had an additional purpose behind his visit this particular time, most nights he simply came to be alone and think. He wasn't sure what drew him to the city. Part of it was curiosity. He had never beheld Elantris in its power, and couldn't understand how anything, even a city so grand, had repeatedly withstood the might of Fjordan, first militarily, then theologically. He also felt a responsibility toward the people, or whatever they were, that lived in Elantris. He was using them, holding them up as an enemy to unite his followers. He felt guilty. The Elantrians he had seen were not devils, but wretches afflicted as if by a terrible disease. They deserved pity, not condemnation. Still, his devils they would become, for he knew that it was the easiest and most harmless way to unify Aerilan. If he turned the people against their government, as he had done in Dúladel, there would be death. This way would lead to bloodshed as well, but he hoped much less.
"Oh, what burdens we must accept in the service of your empire, Lord Yareth," Raythan thought to himself. It didn't matter that he had acted in the name of the church, or that he had saved thousands upon thousands of souls.
The destruction Raythan had caused in Dúladel ground against his soul like a millstone. People who had trusted him were dead, and an entire society had been cast into chaos. But
Yadith required sacrifices. What was one man's conscience when compared with the glory of his rule? What was a little guilt when a nation was now unified beneath Yadith's careful eye? Raythan would ever bear the scars of what he had done. But it was better that one man suffer than an entire nation continue in heresy. Raythan turned away from Elantris, looking instead toward the twinkling lights of Kaye. Yadith had given him another opportunity. This time, he would do things differently. There would be no dangerous revolution, no bloodbath caused by one class turning against another. Raythan would apply pressure carefully until I had enfolded and another more agreeable man took his place. The nobility of Aerilon would convert easily then. The only ones who would truly suffer, the scapegoats in his strategy, were the Elantrians. It was a good plan. He was certain he could crush this Aerilish monarchy without much effort. It was already cracked and weak. The people of Aerilon were so oppressed that he could institute a new government swiftly, before they even received word of Iodin's fall. No revolution. Everything would be clean. Unless he made a mistake. He had visited the farms and cities around Kaye. He knew that the people were stressed beyond their ability to bend. If he gave them too much of a chance, they would rise up and slaughter the entire noble class. The possibility made him nervous, mostly because he knew that if it happened, he would make use of it. The logical yawn within him would ride the destruction as if it were a fine stallion, using it to make Dorethi followers out of an entire nation. Raythan sighed, turning and continuing his stroll. The wall walk here was kept clean by the guard, but if he strayed too far, he would reach a place covered with a dark, oily grime. He wasn't certain what caused it, but it seemed to completely coat the wall once one got away from the central gate area. Before he reached the grime, however, he spotted the group of men standing along the wall walk. They were dressed in cloaks, though the night wasn't cold enough to require it. Perhaps they thought the garments made them more nondescript. However, if that was the intention, then perhaps Duke Telrai should have chosen to wear something other than a rich lavender cloak set with silver embroidery. Raythan shook his head at the materialism. The men we must work with to accomplish Yadith's goals. Duke Telrai did not lower his hood, nor did he bow properly as Raythan approached, though, of course, Raythan hadn't really expected him to do either. The Duke did, however, nod to his guards, who withdrew to allow them privacy. Raythan strolled over to stand beside Duke Telrai, resting against the wall's parapet, and staring out over the city of Kaye. Lights twinkled. So many people in the city were rich that lamp oil and candles were plentiful. Raythan had visited some large cities that grew as dark as Elantris when night fell. "Aren't you going to ask why I wanted to meet with you?" Telrai asked.
"You're having second thoughts about our plan," Raythan said simply.
Telrai paused, apparently surprised that Raythan understood him so readily.
"Yes, well, if you know that already, then perhaps you are having second thoughts as well."
"Not at all," Raythan said.
"Your mannerism, the furtive way you wanted to meet, was what gave you away."
Telrai frowned. This was a man accustomed to being dominant in any conversation. Was that why he was wavering? Had Raythan offended him? No. Studying Telrai's eyes, Raythan could tell that wasn't it. Telrai had been eager, at first, to enter into the bargain with Fjordan. and he had certainly seemed to enjoy throwing his party this evening. What had changed?
I can't afford to let this opportunity pass, Raythan thought. If only he had more time. Fewer than 80 days remained of his 3-month deadline. If he had been given even a year, he could have worked with more delicacy and precision. Unfortunately, he had no such luxury. And a blunt attack, using Tel-Rai, was his best bet for a smooth change in leadership.
"Why don't you tell me what is bothering you?" Raythan said.
"Yes, well," Tel-Rai said carefully. "I'm just not sure that I want to work with Fjordan."
Raythan raised an eyebrow. "You didn't have that uncertainty before."
Tel-Rai eyed Raythan from beneath his hood. In the dark moonlight, it looked like his birthmark was simply a continuation of the shadows, and it gave his features an ominous cast. Or at least it would have, had his extravagant costume not ruined the effect.
Tel-Rai simply frowned.
"I heard some interesting things at the party tonight, Yorn. Are you really the one who was assigned to Dooladel before its collapse?"
"Ah, so that's it," Raythan thought.
"I was there." "And now you're here," Tel-Rai said. "You wonder why a nobleman is made uncomfortable by that news? The entire Republican class, the rulers of Dooladel, were slaughtered in that revolution. And my sources claim that you had a great deal to do with that."
Perhaps the man wasn't as foolish as Raythan thought. Tel-Rai's concern was a valid one. Raythan would have to speak with delicacy. He nodded toward Tel-Rai's guards, who stood a short distance down the wall walk. "Where did you get those soldiers, my lord?"
Tel-Rai paused. "What does that have to do with anything?"
"Humor me," Raythan said.
Tel-Rai turned, glancing at the soldiers. "I recruited them away from the Elantra City Guard. I hired them to be my bodyguards."
Raythan nodded.
"And how many such guards do you employ?"
15,
Tel-Rai said.
"How would you judge their skill?"
Tel-Rai shrugged.
"Good enough, I suppose. I've never actually seen them fight."
"That's probably because they never have fought," Raythan said. "None of the soldiers here in Aerilon have ever seen combat."
"What is your point, Yorn?"
Tel-Rai asked testily.
Raythan turned, nodding toward the Elantra City Guard post, lit in the distance by torches at the base of the wall.
"The guard is what, 500 strong? Perhaps 700? If you include local policing forces and personal guards, such as your own, there are perhaps 1,000 soldiers in the city of Kei. Added to Lord Eondel's legion, you still have well below 1,500 professional soldiers in the vicinity."
"And?"
Tel-Rai asked.
Raythan turned.
"Do you really think that Weir needs a revolution to take control of Aerilon?"
"Weir doesn't have an army," Tel-Rai said. "Fjordan only has a basic defense force."
"I didn't speak of Fjordan," Raythan said. "I spoke of Wyrn, regent of all creation, leader of Shudarith."
"Come now, Lord Tel-Rai, let us be frank. How many soldiers are there in Rovel, in Yador, in Sforden, in the other nations of the East? These are people who have sworn themselves Dorethi. You don't think they would rise up at Wyrn's command?"
Tel-Rai paused. Raythan nodded as he saw understanding growing in the Duke's eyes. The man didn't understand the half of it. The truth was, Wyrn didn't even need an army of foreigners to conquer Aerilon. Few outside the High Priesthood understood the second, more powerful force Wyrn had at his call. The monasteries. For centuries, the Dorethi priesthood had been training its monks in war, assassination, and other arts. Aerilon's defenses were so weak that a single monastery's personnel could probably conquer the country. Raythan shivered at the thought of the monks trained inside of Dachor Monastery, gaining access to defenseless Aerilon. He glanced down at his arm, the place where, beneath his plate armor, he bore the marks of his time there. These were not things that could be explained to Tel'Rai, however.
"My lord," Raythan said frankly, "I am here in Aerilon because Wyrn wants to give the people a chance for peaceful conversion. If he wanted to crush the country, he could. Instead, he sent me. My only intention is to find a way to convert the people of Aerilon."
Tel'Rai nodded slowly.
"The first step in converting this country," Raythan said, "is making certain that the government is favorable to the Dorethi cause. This would require a change in leadership. It would require putting a new king on the throne."
"I have your word, then," Tel'Rai said.
"You will have the throne," Raythan said.
Tel'Rai nodded. This was obviously what he had been waiting for. Raythan's promises before had been vague, but he could no longer afford to be uncommitted. His promises gave Tel'Rai verbal proof that Raythan was trying to undermine the throne. A calculated risk, but Raythan was very good at such calculations.
"There will be those who oppose you," Tel'Rai warned.
"Such as?"
"The woman Serene," Tel'Rai said.
"Her supposed idiocy is an obvious act. My informants say that she's taken an unhealthy interest in your activities, and she was asking about you at my party this evening."
Tel'Rai's astuteness surprised Raythan. The man seemed so pretentious, so flagrant, yet there was obviously a measure of competence to him. That could be an advantage or a disadvantage.
"Do not worry about the girl," Raythan said. "Just take the money we have provided and wait. Your opportunity will come soon. You heard of the news the king received tonight?"
Tel'Rai paused, then nodded.
"Things are moving along as promised," Raythan said. "Now we just have to be patient."
"Very well," Tel'Rai said.
He still had his reservations, but Raythan's logic, mixed with the outright promise of the throne, had obviously been enough to sway him. The Duke nodded with uncustomary respect to Raythan. Then he waved to his guards, moving to walk away.
"Duke Tel'Rai," Raythan said, a thought occurring to him.
Tel'Rai paused, turning back. "Do your soldiers still have friends in the Elantra City Guard?" Raythan asked.
Tel'Rai shrugged.
"I assume so." "Double your men's pay," Raythan said, too quietly for Tel'Rai's bodyguards to hear. "Speak well of the Elantra City Guard to them, and give them time off to spend with their former comrades. It might be beneficial to your future to have it known amongst the guard that you are a man who rewards those that give him allegiance."
"You'll provide the funds to pay my men extra?" Tel'Rai asked carefully.
Raythan rolled his eyes.
"Very well."
Tel'Rai nodded, then walked off to join his guards.
Raythan turned, leaning against the wall, looking back out over Kaye. He would have to wait for a short period before returning to the steps and descending. Telrai was still worried about proclaiming Dorethi allegiance, and hadn't wanted to be seen openly meeting with Raythan. The man was overly worried, but perhaps it was better for him to appear religiously conservative for the moment. It disturbed Raythan that Telrai had mentioned Serene. For some reason, the pert Teoish princess had decided to oppose Raythan, though he had given her no overt reason to do so. It was ironic in a way. She didn't know it, but Raythan was her greatest ally, not her dire enemy. Her people would convert, one way or another. Either they would respond to Raythan's humane urgings, or they would be crushed by the Fjordal armies. Raythan doubted he would ever be able to convince her of that truth. He saw the mistrust in her eyes. She would immediately assume that whatever he said was a lie. She loathed him with the irrational hatred of one who subconsciously knew that her own faith was inferior. Karathi teachings had withered in every major nation to the east, just as they would in Erilan and Teod. Shu-Korath was too weak. It lacked virility. Shu-Dareth was strong and powerful. Like two plants competing for the same ground, Shu-Dareth would strangle Shu-Korath. Raythan shook his head, waited for a safe period of time, then finally turned to walk back along the wall toward the steps that ran down into Kei. As he arrived, he heard an echoing thump from below, and he paused in surprise. It sounded like the city gates had just been closed. "What was that?" Raythan asked, approaching several guards who stood in a ring of glittering torchlight. The guards shrugged, though one pointed at two forms walking through the darkened courtyard below. "They must have caught someone trying to escape." Raythan wrinkled his brow. "Does that happen often?" The guard shook his head. "Most of them are too mindless to try escaping. Every once in a while one tries to scurry away, but we always catch 'em." "Thank you," Raythan said, leaving the guards behind as he began the long descent to the city below. At the foot of the stairs he found the main guardhouse. The captain was inside, his eyes drowsy, as if he had just awakened. "Trouble, Captain?" Raythan asked. The captain turned with surprise. "Oh, it's you, Yorn. No, no trouble. Just one of my lieutenants doing something he shouldn't have." "Letting some Elantrians back into the city?" Raythan asked. The captain frowned, but nodded. Raythan had met the man several times, and at each encounter he had fostered the captain's greed with a few coins. This man was nearly his. "Next time, Captain," Raythan said, reaching onto his belt and pulling out a pouch, "I can offer you a different option." The captain's eyes shone as Raythan began to pull gold weirnings, stamped with Weirn Wulfden's head, out of the pouch. "I have been wanting to study one of these Elantrians up close, for theological reasons," Raythan explained, setting a pile of coins on the table. "I would be appreciative if the next captured Elantrian found his way to my chapel before being thrown back into the city." "That can probably be arranged, my lord," the captain said, slipping the coins off the table with an eager hand. "No one would have to know about it, of course," Raythan said. "Of course, my lord." Chapter 16. Raoden had once tried to set Aiene free. He had been a young boy then, simple of mind but pure of intention. He had been learning about slavery from one of his tutors, and had somehow gotten it into his mind that the Seons were being held against their will. He had gone to Aiene tearfully that day, demanding that the Sion accept his freedom. "But I am free, young master," Aiene had replied to the crying boy. "No, you're not," Raoden had argued. "You're a slave. You do whatever people tell you."
"I do it because I want to, Raoden."
"Why? Don't you want to be free?"
"I want to serve, young master," Aiene explained, pulsing reassuringly. "My freedom is to be here, with you."
"I don't understand."
"You look at things as a human, young master," Aiene said with his wise, indulgent voice. "You see rank and distinction. You try to order the world so that everything has a place either above you or beneath you. To a Sion, there is no above or beneath. There are only those we love. And we serve those we love."
"But you don't even get paid," had been Raoden's indignant response.
"But I do, young master. My payment is that of a father's pride and a mother's love. My wages come from the satisfaction of seeing you grow."
It had been many years before Raoden understood those words, but they had always remained in his mind. As he had grown and learned, listening to countless Karathi sermons on the unifying power of love, Raoden had come to see Sions in a new way, not as servants or even as friends, but as something much more deep and more powerful. It was as if the Sions were an expression of Domai himself, reflections of God's love for his people. Through their service, they were much closer to heaven than their supposed masters could ever really understand.
"You're finally free, my friend," Raoden said with a wan smile, as he watched Aiene float and bob. He still hadn't been able to get even a flicker of recognition from the Sion, though Aiene did seem to stay in Raoden's general vicinity. Whatever the Sheod had done to Aiene, it had taken away more than just his voice. It had broken his mind.
"I think I know what's wrong with him," Raoden said to Galadin, who sat in the shade a short distance away. They were on a rooftop, a few buildings down from the chapel, ejected from their habitual place of study by an apologetic Kahar. The old man had been cleaning furiously in the days since his arrival, and the time had finally come for the final polishing. Early in the morning he had contritely, but insistently, thrown them all out so he could finish. Galadin looked up from his book.
"Who? The Sion?"
Raoden nodded, lying on his stomach near the edge of what was once a garden wall, still watching Aiene. "His Aeon isn't complete."
"Aiene?" Galadin said thoughtfully. "That's healing, Kolo?"
"That's right. Except his Aeon isn't complete anymore. There are tiny breaks in its lines, and patches of weakness in its color."
Galadin grunted, but didn't offer anything more. He wasn't as interested in Aeons or Sions as Raoden was. Raoden watched Aiene for a few more moments before turning back to his study of the Aeon Door Book. He didn't get far, however, before Galadin brought up a topic of his own.
"What do you miss most, Sule?"
the doula asked contemplatively.
"Miss most? About the outside?"
"Kolo," Galadin said. "What one thing would you bring here to Elantris if you could?"
"I don't know," Raoden said. "I'd have to think about it."
"What about you?"
"My house," Galadin said with a reminiscent tone. "I built it myself, Sule. Felled every tree, worked every board, and pounded every nail. It was beautiful. No mansion or palace can compete with the work of one's own hands."
Raoden nodded, imagining the cabin in his mind. What had he owned that he missed the most strongly? He had been the son of a king, and had therefore had many possessions. The answer he came up with, however, surprised him.
"Letters," he said. "I'd bring a stack of letters."
"Letters, Sule?"
It obviously hadn't been the response he had been expecting.
"From whom?"
"A girl." Galladin laughed.
"A woman, Sule. I never figured you for the romantic type.
Just because I don't mope around dramatically like a character from one of your Dúladan romances doesn't mean I don't think about such things."
Galladin held up his hands defensively.
"Don't get de loose do on me, Sule. I'm just surprised. Who was this girl?"
"I was going to marry her," Rayadin explained.
"Must have been some woman."
"Must have been," Rayadin agreed. "I wish I could have met her."
"You never met her?"
Rayadin shook his head.
"Hence the letters, my friend. She lived in Teod. She was the king's daughter, as a matter of fact. She started sending me letters about a year ago. She was a beautiful writer. Her words were laced with such wit that I couldn't help but respond. We continued to write for the better part of 5 months. Then she proposed."
"She proposed to you?" Galladin asked.
"Unabashedly," Rayodin said with a smile. "It was, of course, politically motivated. Serene wanted a firm union between Teod and Eirilan."
"And you accepted?"
"It was a good opportunity," Rayodin explained. "Ever since the Riod, Teod has kept its distance from Eirilan. Besides, those letters were intoxicating. This last year has been difficult. My father seems determined to run Eirilan to its ruin, and he is not a man who suffers dissent with patience. But whenever it seemed that my burdens were too great, I would get a letter from Serene. She had a Sion, too, and after the engagement was formalized, we began to speak regularly. She would call in the evenings, her voice drifting from Ayin to captivate me. We left the link open for hours sometimes."
"What was that you said about not moping around like a character from a romance?" Galladin said with a smile.
Rayodin snorted, turning back to his book. "So there you have it. If I could have anything, I'd want those letters. I was actually excited about the marriage, even if the union was just a reaction to the Dorethai invasion of Dúladel." There was silence.
"What was that you just said, Rayodin?" Galladin finally asked in a quiet voice.
"What? Oh, about the letters?"
"No. About Dúladel."
Rayodin paused. Galladin had claimed to have entered Elantris a few months ago, but doulas were known for understatement. The Dúladan Republic had fallen just over 6 months previously.
"I assumed you knew," Rayodin said.
"What, Sule?" Galladin demanded. "Assumed I knew what?"
"I'm sorry, Galladin," Rayodin said with compassion, turning around and sitting up. "The Dúladan Republic collapsed."
"No,"
Galladin breathed, his eyes wide.
Rayodin nodded. "There was a revolution, like the one in Eirilan 10 years ago, but even more violent. The Republican class was completely destroyed, and a monarchy was instituted."
"Impossible! The Republic was strong. We all believed in it so much."
"Things change, my friend," Rayodin said, standing and walking over to place a hand on Galadin's shoulder.
"Not the Republic, Sule," Galladin said, his eyes unfocused. "We all got to choose who ruled, Sule. Why rise up against that?"
Rayodin shook his head.
I don't know. Not much information escaped. It was a chaotic time in Dúladel, which is why the Fjordal priests were able to step in and seize power. Galadin looked up. That means Eirilan is in trouble. We were always there to keep the Dúrethi away from your borders. I realize that. What happened to Jeskr? He asked. My religion, what happened to it? Réodin simply shook his head. You have to know something. Shu-Dareth is the state religion in Dúladel now, Réodin said quietly. I'm sorry. Galadin's eyes fell. It's gone, then. There are still the mysteries, Réodin offered weakly. Galadin frowned, his eyes hard. The mysteries are not the same thing as Jeskr, Sule. They are a mockery of things sacred, a perversion. Only outsiders, those without any sort of true understanding of the door, practice the mysteries. Réodin left his hand on the grieving man's shoulder, unsure how to comfort him. I thought you knew, he said again, feeling helpless. Galadin simply groaned, staring absently with morose eyes. Réodin left Galadin on the rooftop. The large doula wanted to be alone with his grief. Unsure what else to do, Réodin returned to the chapel, distracted by his thoughts. He didn't remain distracted for long. Kehar! It's beautiful! Réodin exclaimed, looking around with wonder. The old man looked up from the corner he had been cleaning. There was a deep look of pride on his face. The chapel was empty of sludge. All that remained was clean, whitish-gray marble. Sunlight flooded through the western windows, reflecting off the shiny floor, and illuminating the entire chapel with an almost divine brilliance. Shallow reliefs covered nearly every surface. Only half an inch deep, the detailed sculptures had been lost in the sludge. Réodin ran his fingers across one of the tiny masterpieces. The expressions on the people's faces so detailed as to be lifelike. They're amazing, he whispered. I didn't even know they were there, my lord, Kehar said, hobbling over to stand next to Réodin. I didn't see them until I started cleaning, and then they were lost in the shadows until I finished the floor. The marble is so smooth, it could be a mirror, and the windows are placed just right to catch the light. And the reliefs run all around the room? Yes, my lord. Actually, this isn't the only building that has them. You'll occasionally run across a wall or a piece of furniture with carvings on it. They were probably common in Elantris before the Riod. Réodin nodded. It was a city of the gods, Kehar. The old man smiled. His hands were black with grime, and a half-dozen ragged cleaning cloths hung from his sash. But he was happy. What next, my lord? He asked eagerly. Réodin paused, thinking quickly. Kehar had attacked the chapel's grime with the same holy indignation a priest used to destroy sin. For the first time in months, perhaps years, Kehar had been needed. Our people have started living in the nearby buildings, Kehar, Réodin said. What good will all your cleaning here do if they track slime in every time we meet? Kehar nodded thoughtfully. The cobblestones are a problem, he mumbled. This is a big project, my lord. His eyes, however, were not daunted. I know, Réodin agreed, but it is a desperate one. A people who live in filth will feel like filth. If we are ever going to rise above our opinions of ourselves,
We are going to need to be clean. Can you do it?
Yes, my lord.
Good. I'll assign you some workers to speed the process. Raoden's band had grown enormously over the last few days, as the people of Elantris had heard of Kerita's merger with him. Many of the random, ghost-like Elantrians who wandered the streets alone had begun to make their way to Raoden's band, seeking fellowship as a final, desperate attempt to avoid madness.
Kahar turned to go, his wrinkled face turning around the chapel one last time, admiring it with satisfaction.
Kahar, Raoden called.
Yes, my lord.
Do you know what it is? The secret, I mean.
Kahar smiled. I haven't been hungry in days, my lord. It is the most amazing feeling in the world. I don't even notice the pain anymore.
Raoden nodded, and Kahar left.
The man had come looking for a magical solution to his woes, but he had found an answer much more simple. Pain lost its power when other things became more important. Kahar didn't need a potion or an aeon to save him. He just needed something to do.
Raoden strolled through the glowing room, admiring the different sculptures. He paused, however, when he reached the end of a particular relief. The stone was blank for a short section, its white surface polished by Kahar's careful hand. It was so clean, in fact, that Raoden could see his reflection. He was stunned. The face that stared out of the marble was unknown to him. He had wondered why so few people recognized him. He had been Prince of Aerilan, his face known even in many of the outer plantations. He had assumed that the Elantrian simply didn't expect to find a prince in Elantris, so they didn't think to associate spirit with Raoden. However, now that he saw the changes in his face, he realized that there was another reason people didn't recognize him. There were hints in his features, clues to what had been. The changes, however, were drastic. Only 2 weeks had passed, but his hair had already fallen out. He had the usual Elantris blotches on his skin. But even the parts that had been flesh-toned a few weeks ago had turned a flat gray. His skin was wrinkling slightly, especially around the lips, and his eyes were beginning to take on a sunken look. Once, before his own transformation, he had envisioned the Elantrians as living corpses, their flesh rotting and torn. That wasn't the case. Elantrians retained their flesh and most of their figure, though their skin wrinkled and darkened. They were more withering husks than they were decaying corpses. Yet even though the transformation wasn't as drastic as he had once assumed, it was still a shock to see it in himself.
"We are a sorry people, are we not?" Galladin asked from the doorway.
Raoden looked up, smiling encouragingly.
"Not as bad as we could be, my friend. I can get used to the changes."
Galladin grunted, stepping into the chapel.
"Your cleaning man does good work, Sule. This place looks almost free from the Riod."
"The most beautiful thing, my friend, is the way it freed its cleanser in the process."
Galladin nodded, joining Raoden beside the wall, looking out at the large crew of people who were clearing the chapel's garden area.
"They've been coming in droves, haven't they, Sule? They hear that we offer something more than life in an alley. We don't even have to watch the gates anymore. Kerita brings us everyone she can rescue."
"How do you intend to keep them all busy?" Galladin asked.
"That garden is big, and it's nearly completely cleared." "Elantris is a very large city, my friend.
We'll find things to keep them occupied.
Galladin watched the people work, his eyes unreadable. He appeared to have overcome his grief for the moment.
Speaking of jobs, Raoden began, I have something I need you to do.
Something to keep my mind off the pain, Sule?
You could think that. However, this project is a little more important than cleaning sludge.
Raoden waved Galladin to follow as he walked to the back corner of the room and pried a loose stone from the wall. He reached inside and pulled out a dozen small bags of corn. As a farmer, how would you judge the grade of this seed?
Galladin picked up a kernel with interest, turning it over in his hand a few times, testing its color and its hardness.
Not bad, he said. Not the best I've seen, but not bad.
The planting season is almost here, isn't it?
Considering how warm it's been lately, I'd say that it's here already.
Good, Raoden said. This corn won't last long in this hole, and I don't trust leaving it out in the open.
Galladin shook his head.
It won't work, Sule.
Farming takes time before it brings rewards. Those people will pull up and eat the first little sprouts they see.
I don't think so, Raoden said, pushing a few kernels of corn around in his palm.
Their minds are changing, Galladin. They can see that they don't have to live as animals anymore.
There isn't enough room for a decent crop, Galladin argued. It will be little more than a garden.
There's enough space to plant this little amount. Next year we'll have more corn, and then we can worry about room. I hear the palace gardens were rather large. We could probably use those.
Galladin shook his head.
The problem in that statement, Sule, is the part about next year.
There won't be a next year, Kolo. People in Elantris don't last that long.
Elantris will change, Raoden said. If not, then those who come here after us will plant the next season.
I still doubt it will work.
You'd doubt the sun's rising if you weren't proven wrong each day, Raoden said with a smile. Just give it a try.
All right, Sule, Galladin said with a sigh. I suppose your 30 days aren't up yet.
Raoden smiled, passing the corn to his friend, and placing his hand on the doula's shoulder.
Remember, the past need not become our future as well.
Galladin nodded, putting the corn back in its hiding place. We won't need this for another few days. I'm going to have to figure out a way to plow that garden.
Lord Spirit!
Saelin's voice called faintly from above, where he had constructed himself a makeshift watchtower.
Someone is coming!
Raoden stood, and Galladin hurriedly replaced the stone. A moment later, one of Kerida's men burst into the room.
My lord, the man said, Lady Kerida begs your presence immediately.
You are a fool, Daishi, Kerida snapped.
Daishi, the extremely large, well-muscled man who was her second in command, simply continued to strap on his weapons.
Raoden and Galladin stood confused at the doorway to the palace.
At least 10 of the men in the entryway, a full 2/3 of Kerida's followers, looked as if they were preparing for battle.
You can continue to dream with your new friend, Kerida, Daishi replied gruffly. But I will wait no longer, especially not as long as that man threatens the children.
Raoden edged closer to the conversation, pausing beside a thin-limbed, anxious man named Horine. Horine was the type who avoided conflict, and Raoden guessed that he was neutral in this argument.
What's happening? Raoden asked quietly.
One of Daishi's scouts overheard Aeyndin planning to attack our palace tonight, Horine whispered, carefully watching his leaders argue. Daishi has wanted to strike at Aenden for months now, and this is just the excuse he needed.
You're leading these men into something far worse than death, Daishi, Kairita warned. Aenden has more people than you do.
He doesn't have weapons, Daishi replied,
sliding a rusted sword into its sheath with a click.
All that university held was books, and he already ate those.
Think about what you are doing, Kairita said. Daishi turned, his board-like face completely frank.
I have, Kairita. Aenden is a madman. We cannot rest while he shares our border. If we strike unexpectedly, then we can stop him permanently. Only then will the children be safe.
With that, Daishi turned to his grim band of would-be soldiers and nodded. The group moved out the door with purposeful strides. Kairita turned to Raoden, her face a mixture of frustration and pained betrayal.
This is worse than suicide, Spirit.
I know, Raoden said. We're so few, we can't afford to lose a single man. Not even those who follow Aenden. We have to stop this.
He's already gone, Kairita said, leaning back against the wall.
I know Daishi well. There's no stopping him now.
I refuse to accept that, Kairita.
Sule, if you don't mind my asking, what in Dolokin are you planning?
Raoden loped along beside Galadin and Kairita, barely keeping up with the two.
I have no idea, he confessed. I'm still working on that part.
I figured as much, Galadin muttered.
Kairita, Raoden asked, what route will Daishi take?
There's a building that runs up against the university, she replied. Its far wall collapsed a while ago, and some of the stones knocked a hole in the university wall it abuts. I'm sure Daishi will try to get in there. He assumes Aenden doesn't know about the breach.
Take us there, Raoden said.
But take a different route. I don't want to run into Daishi.
Kairita nodded, leading them down a side street.
The building she'd mentioned was a low, single-story structure. One of the walls had been built so close to the university that Raoden was at a loss to guess what the architect had been thinking. The building had not fared well over the years, although it still had its roof, which was sagging horribly. The entire structure seemed on the edge of collapse. They approached apprehensively, poking their heads through a doorway. The building was open on the inside. They stood near the center of the rectangular structure, the collapsed wall a short distance to their left, another doorway a short distance to their right.
Galadin cursed quietly.
I don't trust this.
Neither do I, Raoden said.
No, it's more than that.
Look, Sule.
Galadin pointed to the building's inner support beams. Looking closely, Raoden recognized the marks of fresh cuts in the already weakened wood.
This entire place is rigged to fall.
Raoden nodded. It appears as if Aenden is better informed than Daishi assumed. Maybe Daishi will notice the danger and use a different entrance.
Kairita shook her head immediately.
Daishi is a good man, but very single-minded. He'll march right through this building without bothering to look up.
Raoden cursed, kneeling beside the doorframe to think. He soon ran out of time, however, as he heard voices approaching.
A moment later, Daishi appeared in the doorway on the far side, to Raoden's right. Raoden, halfway between Daishi and the fallen wall, took a deep breath and called out.
Daishi, stop! This is a trap! The building is rigged to collapse!
Daishi halted, half of his men already in the building. There was a cry of alarm from the university side of the room, and a group of men appeared behind the rubble. One, bearing Aenden's familiar mustached face, held a worn fire axe in his hands. Aenden jumped into the room with a cry of defiance,
axe raised toward the support pillar. "Tayane, stop!" Raoden yelled. Aendon stopped his axe in mid-swing, shocked at the sound of his real name. One half